The idea of using science to identify crims that need to be kept off the street is not as far-fetched and as silly as it sounds. A recent decision of the Supreme Court of Wisconsin involving a Mr. Eric Loomis has focused attention on the use of risk assessment profiles in sentencing. Erica Strubel is a writer with the Wisconsin Law Journal.
Eric Loomis, he had been the driver in a drive-by shooting. He had been charged, I think, with 5 separate crimes.
And he was sentenced to 6 years jail and 5 years extended supervision because the judge said he was a high risk to the community. He appealed his sentence to the Supreme Court of Wisconsin. Why did he appeal his sentence?
Well, I think the big issue was that in Eric Loomis's sentencing, the judge had taken into account a certain risk assessment. So basically, it's basically an algorithm-based report. It's supposed to give the judge a sense of whether this person would reoffend or whether they would be okay to be released to the public based on certain answers to certain questions. And it sort of brings to mind the idea that are we being sentenced or put in jail based on just a bunch of numbers that a robot crunches? And I think that's very concerning, especially to the general public.
So it's really all about the dangers of robotized justice.
Yes, it's concerning when you have basically, if you boil it down to the very basics, you kind of have a computer crunching numbers, and that determines whether your client goes to jail or not.
Wisconsin journalist Erica Strubel. So what exactly is this controversial algorithm, the COMPAS risk assessment tool? UNSW Associate Professor Lyria Bennett-Moses is an expert in technology and the law.
We don't know all the details of it. In fact, one of the concurring judges mentions how little they knew about it at the time they had to make their decision. But essentially what it is it looks at all of the data for people who are in the crime database, basically, and it draws inferences from that based on various features of an offender correlating with risk of either reoffending or violent reoffending after their release. So what it does is it gives a particular person, in this case Eric Loomis, a risk score on various factors based on the similarity between Eric Loomis and other people who have reoffended in the database.
So he went to the Supreme Court of Wisconsin saying this should not have been used in calculating or in determining my sentence. What did the Supreme Court of Wisconsin recently decide?
So the Supreme Court of Wisconsin decided that the use made by the circuit court of that tool was appropriate, and it set out also various considerations in terms of what an appropriate use of that tool is and what would be inappropriate.
What was the gist of that? What is appropriate and what isn't appropriate?
First of all, it stressed the importance that the pre-sentencing investigative report tell the courts what are the limitations of the technology so that the courts are aware of, for example, issues around limited transparency, by which I mean a lot of the way the tool works, the kinds of data it takes into account and so forth, is commercial in confidence, so is not known. The limited evaluations that have been conducted of these kinds of tools, the possible differential impact on minorities and so forth, so that the courts are aware of the limitations of the tool at the time they're making their decision. It said in that context, there, as long as those limitations are clear, it is appropriate to use these tools for various purposes, not as a determinative factor, but as a relevant factor. For example, the tool can be used in making a decision to divert a low-risk offender to a non-prison sentence. It can be used to assess whether an offender can be supervised in the community, and it can be used in imposing a term or conditions on probation or affect the level of supervision in the community. However, the majority said it could not be used to determine the severity of the sentence, and it couldn't be used as a determinative factor, so as the sole factor in determining whether a person can be supervised safely and effectively in the community.
And what did the court find as to how the risk assessment tool was used in this particular case involving Eric Loomis?
Well, in this particular case, the court said it was used appropriately. The relevant limitations of the tool were disclosed to the judge, so that was done, and it was used in the context of determining whether or not probation would be made available. And the court used it as one of a number of factors rather than as the determinative factor, which again the court said was a requirement in order to use this tool.
So the court didn't say, look, he got 2 extra years because of this risk assessment calculation.
Correct. So although it was mentioned in sentencing, the court interpreted what the court below had done as being about the probation requirement rather than about the length of the sentence.
Fascinating, this tool, which is known as Compass, it's an algorithm developed by a private company called Northpoint. The company is very secretive. They won't discuss how the algorithm works. The way it works is all commercial in confidence. Extraordinary that courts are relying on something that they really don't know what the inputs are, what the processes are, what the logic is.
Yeah, and doubly inappropriate. Not only do they not understand what factors the tool uses, the other thing that the court mentioned is that in terms of at least in Wisconsin, there's been no proper evaluation of the tool. So on the one hand, if you've got a sort of black box unknown, the best thing is if you know what's inside the black box so you understand how it works. But in absolute minimum, I would have thought, if you've got a black box tool that you can't look inside, you need to conduct an evaluation to test how it impacts on particular people and so forth. And in fact, that's been done and revealed some problems for these kinds of tools.
Indeed, a journalist, Julia Angwin, who's an investigative journalist with a publication called ProPublica, recently did a really interesting investigative piece around how this works or doesn't work. Well, what did she find?
Essentially that it made a distinction based on race, not necessarily deliberately. So it's not necessarily the case that race was one of the factors that the tool expressly looked at, but that there was a differential impact in the way it did its calculations based on race, so that in fact African Americans were treated far worse than white defendants in terms of their risk scores. And there can be various reasons for that without looking at race. Again, you'd have to go inside the tool to work out exactly why, but often the tools can look at things like, you know, levels of education, for example, or access to financial resources and so forth that can be differentiated between different racial groups, thereby adversely affecting one racial group relative to another.
The investigation published in ProPublica obtained the risk scores of 7,000 people arrested in Broward County in Florida, and they found that the scores proved remarkably unreliable. Black defendants were much more likely to be falsely flagged as future criminals at twice the rate of white defendants, and white defendants were often mislabeled as low risk, or far more so than black defendants. It's a fairly striking contrast here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So in a sense, the tool was far less accurate in terms of, yeah, exactly right, in terms of flagging low risk, it was much more accurate for whites than African Americans.
There was one particularly striking example, Brisha Borden, an 18-year-old African American who stole an $80 child's bike from a schoolyard, and compared her case with 41-year-old white male Vernon Prater, who'd been picked up for shoplifting from a Home Depot store. He'd already been convicted of armed robbery and attempted armed robbery and had served 5 years in jail. The risk assessment tool found Brisha Borden to be a higher, much higher risk than Vernon Prater. And of course, 2 years later, it became very clear that the computer got it completely wrong and backwards, and not surprisingly.
Absolutely.
And the issue is that in a number of states, including Wisconsin, but not Florida, the results are actually given to judges at the sentencing hearing or at the sentencing.
Correct. It's been used for longer in other contexts. So bail and parole, the use goes back further. But for sentencing, yes, in some states in America are starting to use it in that context now.
Do we have any of these kinds of tools operating here in Australia that you know of?
Not that I know of, no. Not in this context. Obviously people use data and things like that, but not as far as I'm aware in the context of sentencing.
UNSW Associate Professor Lyria Bennett-Moses. She's currently a key researcher in the Data to Decisions Cooperative Research Centre, which is exploring the legal and policy issues surrounding the use of data analytics for law enforcement and national security.